I'd have, Dick Smith and I, and maybe the only council member here, but we certainly wanted to hear a report back from SCDOT, Michelle, here, on Silver Bluff. You may recall that at one point in time, we were thinking in terms of the lighting Silver Bluff, because of the future traffic, and what we thought the traffic would be, all these sorts. And then we met with Woodside, and agreed with them that we didn't need to widen Silver Bluff in the future, but to concentrate on the intersections, because they do need to be improved for safety reasons. So we met with SCDOT, Michelle.
Was it close to him?
And they went back, and Brian, was it Brian? No, Brian was with us all.
Brian was with me, Brian.
I'm not sure.
Right. Is yours?
And so we met with them, and Al, Barry met with us, and we talked about that, and we got some talks from DOT, and they said they would go back and do some analysis, and so now they're coming back to us with several views on what could be done, right? And Roger, if you would like to say anything else on it, I mean, that's very briefly general where we are today. And so without further ado, we're just going to sit down here in the audience here and turn it over to Michelle.
The only thing that I'd like to say is that we hope to come to as quick a solution as possible. So Michelle and her team of folks at SCDOT can start moving forward. They're ready to move forward at any time that a decision can be made as to what this cross-section will look like.
Having lived up Silver Bluff previously, there's two thought given to putting the sidewalks in. If there's anything, if there's a dearth on the south side, is any areas for pedestrians in any capacity, whether it's on Whiskey or on Silver Bluff. Due to that, I think it makes it a very dangerous area if someone were to choose to walk down to any of the stores, markets, or places of business. And in an expanding community like Aiken, an effort to incorporate pedestrian traffic into all aspects of the city needs to be addressed.
Thank you. I'll start actually by answering that question, and I'll go into presenting what I have. It has been a directive for the South Carolina Department of Transportation not only to consider the vehicular traffic, but also our kind of pedestrian traffic. For all of our projects, we have to make some type of accommodation or to show where that type of accommodation may not be feasible. And when I say may not be feasible, there are some routes that we may have the truck traffic, the volume of truck, and the use of the facility is so high it may not be conducive to walking or that type of bike ride. And our last meeting, we've been on March 3rd with members of the city to discuss this project. Initially, it was requested that this section be a 5-lane section, and after some investigation, we are determining that a 5-lane section may not be the best suit for the community. So we are looking at a 3-lane section because of the needs there for that type of movement. What we have presently is a 2-lane section, and as the traffic goes down Silver Bluff Road, we have backups, which are used by those trying to make that left turn, and the 3-lane section would accommodate that. It would provide that center turning lane with a through lane for traffic to continue on the straight route while those are waiting to make a left turn. There were several things we need to look at from that first meeting, and one of the issues was the need for turn lanes, and then to consider single square at all possible. And we will look at that when we get into the design. And also to look at whether we do need center turning lanes, designated turning lanes with storage, or a continuous third lane, where you can make that turn at the number of businesses that are along Silver Bluff and make an accommodation for those motorists. what I brought back as a result of that meeting, went back and we created some conceptual designs, some conceptuals actually, to come back and show you so that you can see, compare what's existing and what a three-lane section would look like. That has proved to be very helpful with us in planning projects or in the development of projects, because we could go back to the municipality, the neighborhoods, or the general public that the project may be affecting and show them this is what it could look like. It's been helpful in minimizing the anxiety of the project or actually coming up with a better plan once DOT and the public get together, put our heads together, and determine what's good for the project. My first display here shows the part of Silver Bluff and it's near the Hitchcock Parkway intersection. It's near the business park. And if those that have folders, if you look in your folders at that first page, the inset picture shows what's existing now. Where at the end of the widening section, the multi-lane section, tapering back down to the two-lane section, this is what's existing. This is what it could look like. This is at the Indian Creek Trail intersection here. This first display shows the three lanes. This is our center turning lane. This is what I call the center turning lane. It's a continuous lane rather than having the storage lanes where you have your pavement. Your markings may come down the lane like that and then curve in and provide storage for that, just designated for that particular turn. We have a continuous turn, so if there's a side road here and then there's a business entrance down here, you still have that storage for the left turn. This section is actually proposed with curb and gutter. Give you an idea of what that could look like with curb and gutter, no sidewalk. We would have to accommodate them some width, maybe some grass shoulder or grass urban sidewalk is what we call it. There's just an extra width for those that are walking. They'll have a place, a safe place to walk during the time that vehicles are coming around. If you go to the second sheet, the next page, it's the same section. At the same location, intersection of Indian Creek Trail. But this section shows what it could look like to have sidewalk along one side. We will show one side, and like I said, these conceptuals are for you to look at, and then we'll make a determination as to whether you want sidewalk on one side or both sides. Keeping in mind that sidewalk on both sides will require more right-of-way. I know there was a concern about keeping the area, the atmosphere of the area, the aesthetics of the area close to what it is, and not have wide swaths of asphalt or concrete going down the core. There was also a concern about trees, the number of trees that may have to be cut down to accommodate this. We have it's fairly grown and developed area in here with a lot of trees, useful landscaping, want to keep the area more natural looking. And to have sidewalk on both sides, that would impact a little bit more.
But now on Silver Bluff, if you're coming up the first section off of Whiskey Road, there's sidewalks on both sides.
Yes.
Then you go to no sidewalks at all as you veer towards Woodside Foundation. Mm-hmm. Highwall has sidewalks on both sides until you get to the intersection going up towards the bypass. But it seems to me to make sense with the residential community on the left side. You point to the right side that sidewalks would be most necessary on the left side of the street due to the amount of pedestrian traffic that would be coming out that way.
Now keep in mind these are just conceptions. The placement of the sidewalk will be determined during the development of the project. If it's better for the residents and better for the public to put the sidewalk on one side or another, we can do that. But for this purpose, I just needed to show sidewalk and what this section could look like with sidewalk. But this is not set. The final decisions have not been made as to what the typical section of this project would be. So the purpose of this is to give you an idea of what the three-lane section would be with the sidewalk, but that sidewalk could be on your left side on the Woodside plantation side as well.
It actually could be on both sides.
It could be on both sides. For this purpose, I showed it on one side because I know that there was concern about the access. section of right-of-way and the corridor, because it's a fairly tight corridor going through there. So I showed it on one side, but if that is what the need of the citizens of Aiken is, to have sidewalks on both sides, we can't accommodate that.
And is there any thought to a bus stop area for the PFD? There is a one down there as of right now, that's Times Express. It goes down to the south side. This project is going to go this way. It seems to me that designating an area for a bus stop also on that stretch due to the volume of residents that would be, and the main thoroughway a bus stop would be something that definitely would be as a designated area.
And that's certainly something that can be looked at, but we would look for direction and coordination with the city on any accommodations for bus stops, bus turnouts. We term those bus turnouts, where you have, if you put in mind a parallel parking situation where your sidewalk will come and then there's a notch out, if you will, a little alcove that the bus can turn into, pick up its passengers, and then come back into traffic. Those type things are certainly things that can be considered, but we would coordinate with the city to determine the needs for those things for the project.
May I ask why something like that wasn't looked at in the study?
I really don't know.
It would seem that when you're dealing with a major traffic improvement, that those type of variables would be some of the first things that you take into account.
Does the best for expressing the realm now?
It does, actually. It goes down to the food volume.
Everything expands and crowds. Well, let me suggest we let Michelle go through her presentation, and then we can ask some questions.
We only have full confidence.
Yeah, Michelle, I have one question at this point. How far is this little turning lane going to?
This middle turning lane, for what I have proposed in this presentation, will continue through the duration of the project.
The entire project?
The entire project. This next shows in, I think this is Woodside, the subdivision.
That's Sound Creek.
That's the revised.
That's Executive Park.
That's Executive Park. Right.
Yeah, that's Woodside Executive Park, on the right side of the entrance there.
Okay.
That's the main entrance.
It's the main entrance, yeah.
Otherwise, you have Parkwell Drive.
If you, as I said before, if you look at the inset, that's what we have currently. This is what could be proposed for that section there. I know there was some concern to us about a right turn, free flow movement coming out of this area. So those that need to make that right turn, they continue along, and there's a triangular-shaped pylon that channelizes that traffic, and then they can merge with the traffic. There's left turn accommodations made into this, and then we continue on with the third lane, and this is going away from town. The next page would be the same scenario, but with the addition of sidewalk. And then on this one, I'm showing the sidewalk on the opposite side to reiterate that sidewalk could be on either side of the project or both sides if any decides that that's what they need for the project. Okay. The next one, it's one that we've been doing quite frequently for projects that there is a lot of natural areas, such as this one, where we include a grass strip between the curbing and the sidewalk. What that does is provide a little bit more separation between traffic and pedestrian, and then it tends to incorporate a little bit more aesthetics into the design. This next one is moving out further out of town. This is near the Richardson Lake Road area. We discussed it just briefly, maybe some planted medians there. I understand that there may be some future development plan for the area, I'm not sure, but we put in this conceptual here, so that you can see what a planted median could look like, should you want planted medians for the project or other places in the project, but just to give you an idea of what a planted median could look like. There was also, and I don't have it here, I'm one short of the display board, but if you turn pages, or the first page, or the last page in your envelope, there is also a conceptual that shows the planet media and a roundabout there at Richardson Lake, once a four-way intersection is created, should one ever be created. So that's another idea.
The circle here?
Yes.
Okay. Now, is that a roundabout?
That would be what we would have for our roundabout. Just to put it on the paper, just not having any ideas about what the city would want, and just to put it out there, just to give you an idea of what it could look like, that would be the bare bones of what it could look like. And then the project would go from there. So those are several things to consider. And what I'd like to do, to leave here today, is to be able to determine what type of section we want. And it sounds that, like, we're pretty certain we want a three-lane section, and then determine whether sidewalks be at one side or both sides, and any other items that I would need to look at. Now, keep in mind that much of what I've shown you is very preliminary. We have not looked at it from a design aspect. This is specifically the traffic circle. There are several design constraints that are involved in determining whether a traffic circle will even work, particularly the speed limit. Right there, it's posted at 45. We would have to consider other speed limit options if we were to consider that type of intersection. So there are several design marks that you would have to meet to include that. But in some of in your other areas, a three-lane section is doable, is feasible. And the determination would be, do we want a three-lane section? Do we want sidewalks? And do we want sidewalks on both sides? Should we separate sidewalks from the curb cut, or go back to what we have here? For instance, where we have the curbing and the sidewalk that are
Michelle, I think. Sorry, go ahead.
I have a question about this, the third lane and the solid yellow lines. What is the law about crossing the yellow lines? And one of the reasons I bring this up is the middle section on Whiskey Road, and at the arts meetings when we've talked about the possibility of putting in a section in the middle or some kind of barrier, the people from your department, actually, from the DOT, have said you couldn't do that because it would be taking away existing access. So I guess my question gets into, does this set some kind of precedent that down the road, then it would be difficult to change it to a wider road with a median down the middle?
Okay. What they were referencing, what she's talking about is raised concrete beam.
Any medium.
Okay. Well, let me start with raised concrete beam. Raised concrete mediums on a project, on a multi-lane project, will limit access. And by that, I mean left turn access. If you have that raised concrete medium, and businesses along each side, if you're going, let's say this is a north-south facility, and you have businesses on each side, and if I'm traveling north, but my destination is over to my left, I can't make that left turn until I get to a permissible access point. And that's why we are very careful about the raised concrete medians and projects, particularly during lighting. If it is a high-density area and then the municipality or the city or county has their access management plan in place and they are in themselves trying to control access points, we work with them. But in a project, if you put a raised concrete median, right away prices skyrocket because we are damaging businesses by eliminating their left-turn customers. That means there's...
But what's the law here about crossing the solid yellow line?
What we have, when we have that third lane, you'll have a solid yellow line on the outside and a broken yellow line on the inside. You can use that as your rest area for your left-turn movement into different businesses.
So people from either side are allowed to cross the solid yellow line.
Michelle, sure. One thing we talked about also, I think, was when you come out of Woodside, the possibility of having an acceleration lane. I mean, Chad brought that up. And I don't see a picture of that.
It'd be similar to this, but it's not.
Yeah.
Yes, and when we came out, we we took pictures of several different places. That is actually another section that does this for us. And we came out and took pictures. It took pictures of the business park and to create the conceptuals. But this scenario was used to show you what it could look like at any of the locations that you made in this type of facility.
Okay, about the tree. There was concern about how far you could go over and right away and would it take down any trees and that kind of thing.
Well, in this area we were looking, I had questions about possibly this tree. It's hard to tell when he's doing this as far as the depth of how wide it is because he's looking at it in two dimensions. Possibly this tree and maybe some of these other trees. We were concerned as well about some of the sidewalk along here. Just having these clips of the area, it's hard to say at this point what would be affected along
here. Okay, so you haven't gotten to that point.
No, sir. We are very early. Once we make the determination, then we'll start sending surveyors out, and then we can answer more of these questions.
Well, part of the determination on that particular issue is how far will it come over? Will the fence have to come down and move the fence back? Mm-hmm. Which I wouldn't think would be much of a problem if you just found a couple of feet.
Mm-hmm. Yep, but
okay. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Michelle, in the presentation, first of all, I want to compliment you, okay? Based upon what we started from where we are today, you can really understand it. The presentation that you had shown right now, are you taking any additional right away in any of this presentation on the tree lane?
Okay. We discussed that a little bit in the meeting. Typically, to go to a three-lane section, we would be just inside what could be existing right-of-way. If we had 37.5 feet or 40 feet on either side, we would be just inside. But because of construction slopes, because of erosion control, it's very likely that we will need some right-of-way. It's hard to say how much right-of-way at this point because we would have to get into the drainage design and that could require additional right-of-way. You know, just because I don't have survey yet, it would be very difficult to tell what I need. This is in a curve, my back of slope here, and we're high. You can tell looking at this picture, we could be a little bit higher. We're just not knowing how far that could go out right now is hard to tell.
The two trees that the mayor brought up, they are in your right of way, definitely. I think from our perspective, something like that with the trees removed would be very acceptable. I'm talking, there are two large graphic trees that are right there. And that's really, in the mud grid, they're really right on the right way.
Okay.
And let me say that in our development projects, especially in the low country areas where the trees are also a large concern, we have worked very closely with groups and municipalities as far as preservation of trees. There could be some times that we can avoid it, but then just know that we will coordinate with you and work very closely with you in making those determinations.
The sidewalk would be in addition to the right of way for the three lanes. Any sidewalks would be.
It would be all inclusive.
It would include the sidewalks.
When you purchase right away for a project, if it includes sidewalks.
Well, right.
It's all inclusive.
I know that. But you said that you wouldn't need any extra right of way for the three lanes except for just a few feet. But if we added sidewalks on both sides, then we would need that much more right away. Right?
Yes, ma'am. Anything that we add to the typical section outside of our roadway width would require additional right away or could possibly. And that's actually
contingent
on how much
right-of-way
is out there.
You had said we should talk about sidewalks and whether we want them on one side or both sides.
Yes.
And of course, I think my first inclination would be, oh, gee, I'd like them on both sides and I'd like it to look pretty and all that. Mm-hmm. But if it ends up mowing down 50 trees, it might be a different point of view. So, I mean, I guess before I could even answer you, I would need to know, I'd like to see what would happen if we had sidewalks on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't do a lot of damage, I think it would be great. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it might.
Mm-hmm. Jane, can I say something to me, Michelle? The existing road right now comes up almost to the wood side right away, almost. There is a large right of section across the way, right next to the fence. There are very few trees, if any trees, in there.
Across the road?
That is correct. Mm-hmm. On the Gem Lake side, but there are no trees essentially in that whole area.
So your feeling would be that it should be on that side, on the west side?
You would not be removing many trees, if any trees at all. On the wood side, you would definitely be removing the
See, that's my point. My opinion would depend upon how many trees you're going to take out. So that's my opinion.
Michelle, I think ideally, the three-lane section, you need to look at sidewalk on both sides.
Okay.
With the idea that we may only have on one side, depending on what happens. But at least initially, we look at both sides of the road.
That's right. Right.
Or, and your typical sidewalk is 4.5 to 5 feet wide?
There's a... If you could look at your sheet as I point here for those that don't have sheets, and look at this side because it's larger. This is our curb and gutter, with the high part being the curb, and this is being our gutter line. That's about a 2 foot width and then a 5 foot sidewalk to accommodate the ADA requirements.
So without the grass?
Without the grass. Yeah. If we add grass, if we go to this one, that's minimum probably a 2 foot strip. Right. In addition to that width, we are 5 feet, a foot and a half for a curb and gutter. That's 6.5 feet, and that's from the edge of the pavement to the back of the sidewalk. And then if we add the 2 foot gap grass strip, it would be about 8.5 feet. So that would be something to consider. Like I said, I put it in for aesthetics purposes for you to have a look at it and determine whether that is something that you need or something that you don't need.
Three lanes to 37.5 feet is a just approved.
Typically, what? From center line to right away line on a two lane section, you 37.5 feet, being 65 feet overall from right away line to right away line. So, in some areas that could be adequate, but that's dependent upon what areas we add and what may be necessary for construction or erosion control. So that I won't be able to determine until we have surveyed and we get some type of preliminary design on the paper. And in that survey, they would locate those trees. They would locate any signs or any fixed objects along, and then when we lay the alignment on it, I'll be able to tell what is impacted by the project. And I can start with, we can start with, from that survey, and then we look at it, and if the impact is too great, we can take sidewalk off of one side.
Michelle, what I was looking at was, to my left as I hold the diagram in front of me, there's a tremendous slope.
What page are you on?
The one you have on your...
This one.
Right.
Yeah, on the left.
Right here.
Mm-hmm. Right. But where you have your greenery, you're talking about sidewalks as well, right?
Well, that depends. If we're looking at sidewalk on both sides, that would be impacted. And then the determination would have to be made is, are these shrubs inside the right-of-way or outside the right-of-way? There's several things you have to look at. Keep in mind, and that's a good point that you brought out, at the back of this curve, you see how the topography drops
right
off.
Tremendous.
When we have that kind of drop, our right of way tends to go out further because we have to cover those slopes. As we widen, if you will, if you can imagine, the roadway going like this,
right,
we're flat. We have to take that same slope back down to the ground line. So the higher we are, the further out it's going to reach. Now, there have been times when we've done that where property owners have signed permissions for those construction slopes, but we will show that it's right away. So there are several things we have to consider, but I won't be able to consider them at this point. I have to wait to surveys and get some preliminary design done, and I have to make that determination as to how wide that section could be in certain points. But we need a starting point, and that's why I'm here today. Where do I start? Three-lane section, consider sidewalks on both sides. And if so, we get that done, and then we can come back and meet and show you what that section would look like.
Okay. Yes? Michelle, one more question. My only concern is, if you have sidewalks on both sides, and you need some additional land, for runoff, for, you know, erosion, whatever it may be. And especially if you're talking, again, when, you know, with side to side, you're talking about removing a tremendous amount of trees. Go beyond two grass and piss. I
will certainly keep that in mind. And as I said, when I get more definitive information on paper, we can look at that and determine what that impact is, and then we can always see how the project happens. And it could be where we may have to avoid sidewalk on that side and do sidewalk on the opposite side. But all of that is open right now. Until we get something on paper and determine what it looks like.
When do you think that might be, Michelle?
Well, right now, I leave here today. And our process is we put together a project team. That project team determines project schedule a little briefly before. The funding for this project, we got approval for maybe 2 months ago at best when the policy committee approved the transition of this funding from those other two projects to this one. Ideally, we would have started this project or those projects back in October. That was the beginning of our fiscal year. So we will get the project team together. They will let me know what their schedule is and how much time do they need for each stage of the project, beginning from surveys. What is the survey schedule? How long will it take you to go out there to do those surveys, bring the information back, and then hand it off to our preliminary design section? Once each section determines the time necessary, then we will determine what the right-of-way obligation date will be and then the construction obligation date will be. For the project of this plan, we could be a year or so in design by the time we go through, look at any permitting obligations we may have for the project, public hearings, public information needs, and any other public coordination that we need for the project.
Mm-hmm. At some point in time, though, during that, let's say, year cycle, sometime earlier on, you've got to come back to us and show us so that we can make some decisions.
Yes, sir.
On, you know, one sidewalk, two sidewalks, one side of the street, and whatever else there may be to make a decision on. Then council needs to approve that. What I'm saying is, I think before you go too far, you get to a point in your
right.
time, and then we need to come back and either approve it or not approve it. So it's gonna waste time.
That's exactly right. At this point, with the length of time that it's taking for our survey crew to go out and then gather information, we could be 2 to 3 months out before we can get a survey completed. And then, barring any complications or delays, another month and a half or so for our preliminary design section to take that information and put it on paper and for us to get some type of alignment. So we could be 4 or 5 months out before I have something on paper to show. And that would be here, that would still be in preliminary stage before I go design and get it and starts the polish up.
At what point would we know the cost?
I can go back now and from what I have do an estimate of a cost, a preliminary cost estimate based on the information that I have now. I can week or 2 weeks have that.
Because at some point in time we're gonna save some money on this, obviously, from what it was originally planned.
Right.
And we can put that money back to, you know, Hitchcock's and those section work on Hitchcock or Lightning or whatever council decides to put the extra money, so to speak, that you're not going to spend on this project on something else.
I think, you know, anything that's left from the project, we need parts to determine where
that money would go. Right. Yeah. But we would determine first.
Right.
The city would give the recommendation.
Exactly.
Dr. Lionheart's
I would say when we get closer to construction, when we know what we're going to have in this project, then we can make the determination as to what could possibly be left. And the reason I say that now is in these estimates, with the fuel prices going up as rapidly as they are current. Initially, for the 5-lane section, I estimated just over $7.5 million to finish that project. If you think about 2-lane section, two-mile 5-lane section, about $7.5 million, and that's the estimate of what we would spend in writing, what we spend in construction plus preliminary design. Of course, the 3-lane sections would not cost that, but what we've seen are our unit prices continually escalate because fuel prices are here to come in on the line. So it, at this point, it would be hard to say. I'll put together an estimate, but when it comes, when we get ready to go to construction, we're ready to get it out. Yes,
I have two questions. One is at the beginning of your presentation, you talked about the standard of accommodating pedestrians and bicyclists. And so, is it safe to assume that your lanes are wide enough to accommodate bicycles as well as cars? That you made that those outside lanes a little bit wider?
Yes, we have. Yes.
How much? So, what are the lane width?
We have. We actually developed a new section because of that, where we've. Previously, we had a 12-foot travel lane with a 15-foot median, and then another 12-foot travel lane. What we've come up with is a new section that has your 15-foot median that serves your center turning lane. Then we use a 14-foot outer lane, and then post shared road signs. Some projects, because of the narrow corridor that we're dealing with, the right-of-way, additional right-of-way is a concern. Trees are a concern. We did not designate 5 lane, just the width that you would need for a 5 lane. That would be, I think that's anywhere from 6 to 9 feet in addition on one side. But what we've done is come up with a section that could accommodate bikes as well as motorists within a 14-foot lane. So all of what I've put here, we've included 14-foot width here from here to edge of pavement. 15-foot turning median here, and then 14 feet from the shell line to the edge of vegetation there.
My second question was, what kind of approval and when do you need to take back to artists for the modeling that they're doing? Remember we talked about on Monday what configuration of road would be in order for GDOT to do their modeling, and there was some concern that it needed to be made official so that GDOT knew what to model for.
He left the meeting Monday, and he said that he was going to consider this a 3-lane section. And the reason being is there is he was also looking at modeling a section that started at the end of this project out further away from town, but he was considered 5 lanes. And we asked him to reconsider that because we would not have a 5-lane section to the point to Richardson Lake Road. So I would think that would probably be some instruction from your office or the planning office to let them know that that we are considering a 3-lane section for this, so that we can continue this model.
I only asked because they did want to have some kind of confirmation that they could by today or tomorrow.
Okay, and I would probably talk to Paul or Steve Stroman about that so they can go through their options. As far as the modeling and planning projects, that, for instance, if there was something that needed to be changed through DOT, we would go through Brian and Mike Dennis. Those are our planning coordinators for the RC area. The letter will not come directly from me to the Arts Committee that is considering the long-range plan. So that probably would be some coordination between Steven Shorman or Paul McCann to let them know that this is what the section is. The group, it sounds like tonight, that the group is firm and would like to go move forward with a 3-lane section. So, make that. I think that determination has been made in conflict before we can go to that. Any other questions?
I think, is there any concern that does anyone have any objections to this continual 3-lane? That looks good.
I think it looks good. Having sidewalks on both sides,
okay,
which are due to trees, but I'm very impressed with you presented the seem to be very attractive.
I'm going to go back with the assumption, because right-of-way is a huge concern for us, that we would probably go with a section similar to this one that does not include the grass strip between Southwell.
There again, does it depend on the right-of-way and what you want?
It depends on the right-of-way, but then keep in mind that if you consider, let's consider the widest possible typical that we have. That would be the 14-foot travel lanes, 15-foot median, the curb and gutter, the minimum 2-foot grass strip, and the 5-foot sidewalk. That's your widest section. That does not include what we are not certain about right now as far as construction slopes for those that fall behind the back of the sidewalk. If right-of-way is concerned, if it gets to the point where, I guess what I'm saying is tell me whether you want me to consider the grass strip, and I'll do that, and then we can start taking things out as we need to.
Well, I thought we would go for the full thing.
Okay.
Full, the big picture there with the grass strip.
Okay.
Unless council doesn't want to consider the grass strip.
It has to be 2 feet wide.
And then we can come down.
That's been typically our minimum. I will look at that.
I'm just thinking of the one up the hill on Highway 1 up Richland Avenue. It's not that wide. It's just grass. It's not a lawn either.
No, it's just grass, and I've not seen one that be as narrow as a foot.
And the sidewalk, is it along a road of this kind that it has to be 5 feet wide? Because we just built sidewalks on Main Avenue, and they weren't 5 feet wide.
There will be some things that I would have to look into if I do not build a 5-foot sidewalk. But as I said, when we're spending $1,000, there are certain criteria we have to meet. And a 5-foot sidewalk meets ADA requirements. And if I build something that is more narrow than a 5-foot sidewalk, I may have to discuss that or get some type of design.
Well, I was just thinking that might be one place where we could have some flexibility. And I was thinking, when we went my mother around, I had kind of a legal. I believe I had many 5 foot sidewalks to use.
What we consider is if you're pushing a wheelchair on a 5 foot sidewalk, there's someone coming towards you, so that person would not have to step off the sidewalk to be passed. We do have to consider those things, but I will look at those things as we get closer to design on some paper and then if the grass strip is something that we have to look at. Put it in there, and reducing the width of it, or looking at the sidewalk, and maybe removing one side of the sidewalk, we can certainly do.
Any other comments? Michelle, we certainly do. Thank you for this. Thank you for your good work. Appreciate your cooperation.
In the interim, if you have any questions or concerns, please feel free to call me. Mr. LaDuke has my number, and I think several of you that have met me before have my number. So if you have any concerns, you can either call me or go through these gentlemen, and they will get that message to you.
And you're talking probably September, sometime late summer, early fall, before you'll have the survey and some preliminary work done, and you take a look then to see about the grass strips and sidewalks.
That's right. Barring any delays based on schedules of the other groups at the corner.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Quite
welcome. Thank you so much. It's good to see you. This is me. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I don't have a handout either.
You don't give them to us before you make your presentation, or after?
I lost part. Kept this part. Lost this part.
Off the press. Thanks, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you. Let's print this.
Wow.
See. Okay. All right.
Uh-oh. Over there. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Aiken City Council work session of 4-13-05. We have one item, and that is the business license. Talk about that, making changes, and we're also very fortunate to have Mr. Bates and Mr. Robinette with us to help. I assume that you make a sort of presentation, Roy, or just answer questions. Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Well, we're very happy that you're with us, sir. Both of you. So, further ado, Mr. LeDuc, would you like to make some comments?
City Council asked us last fall, and Mr. Bates was here. He explained how business licenses worked, what was done in the state. You asked us to look at possibly changing the system we have, and so we had hired him to make the changes. We had a look at over 3,000 different businesses that have licenses currently. Each one of those had to be plugged into the new system to determine what their rates would be so that the adjustments could be made. Lex and Anita are going to work through the slide system, and whoever's going to be speaking, if you could speak over here at the microphone, you could do it right now, so that we can record this. And I believe Lex is going to go ahead and walk us through the new procedure.
Yes, sir. Okay. Hi, I'm Lex Kirkland, your business license administrator, and we prepared a slideshow to kind of bring you up to speed on where we went from last fall to where we are now. We've done a lot of work. Like Roger said, we reclassified about a little over 3,000 businesses since we last spoke with you, and Mr. Robinette helped us with that quite a bit. What we're going to do is we're going to start looking at this slide, which is kind of to give you just a little bit of history of the revenue that we're talking about. The top line that you'll see, the business licenses, that's really what we're going to be talking about the most today. But you also see on here, there's a few other entries. The business license, insurance company business licenses, telecommunication business licenses, GeForce Cable, and Aiken Electric Cooperative. All of those are collected by using the business license ordinance. The SCENG we included on the slide. It's a franchise fee, but it's paid in lieu of the business license tax. So when we talk about them, we usually talk about all of these that you see up here, which you can see in fiscal year 2004, we collected just a little bit over $5.5 million. And this year we've got budgeted for $5,165,600 for the fiscal year 05 budget. If you look at the bottom, we're actually already over the budget on the business licenses that we're going to be talking about, those 3,200 or so accounts that we reclassified. As of the March 31st, we'd already collected just over $1.6 million. From the business license tax on those businesses. Ms. Lilly, could you go to the next slide, please? In the conversion, many of the businesses changed classifications. Some moved up, some moved down. What we're going to do is we're going to look at some of the classes, and we've got some examples on here of what you would have found in a class one before, which, as you all know, was the SIC classification system. And we also have what some of the examples of businesses that you would find in the new class one under the NAICS system. Class one in the NAICS, here are some examples of businesses that you'd find in there: bookstores, gas stations, motels, and restaurants. Some of these businesses were in a Class 1 before, but for instance, bookstores and motels are both moving from Class 2 to Class 1. One of the businesses that would be moving under the new system, meaning that they would move to a lower rate class. Put just a few more of the classes up there, if you would.
Now, Lex, may I ask a question? That's because we're going to the new system, right? And
right.
The new system has those things in that class.
Right.
Is
and
that right?
I can talk, yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Really, just, you know, kind of to speak on that topic, and really one of the biggest reasons that we propose going to the NAICS is it's breaking them up by IRS statistics. The SIC code and the NAICS code both did that. The difference is the SIC code hasn't been updated since 1987, and it's never going to be updated again. So the IRS statistics on the SIC code are dated. The NAICS code was originally produced in 1997 and has been updated in 2002. So what we're looking at is more recent statistics, better numbers, so that when we split the businesses into these classifications, it's being done more fairly. As you know, our business license ordinance and these classes are based on the ability to pay. So by using the most recent IRS statistics, we're treating our businesses more fairly. Okay. We already looked at Class 1. Class 2, we see some businesses moving into Class 2. Some of the examples that we have here, such as building supplies, general merchandise, both of these would have been Class 1s under the old system. They moved to Class 2. The tire stores and auto repair stores that we see in Class 2 now were actually in Class 3, so they're moving down a class. You know, we could go through this whole list, but I think you get the idea that there was a lot of movement by doing the classification change. Can we go on to the next slide, please?
Lex.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there any reason why you have motels under 1 and 2?
Yes, ma'am. Having motels under 1 and 2 is to show that it moved. If you look on Class 1 under the NAICS system, the motels, this is the new system where the motels would be once we made the conversion. They would be in rate Class 1. Before the change, they were in rate Class 2 under the SIC code.
Okay.
Now, do we assume that the lower classes have a lower rate?
That is correct.
Except for 8?
8 is a... is a different class. There are different rates in Class 8.
So from 1 through 7, the rates escalate?
Yes, ma'am. In 15-cent increments.
Is the rate the same in Class 8, or is it different for different folks?
Well, you'll find our utilities, for instance, the Aiken Electrics, G-Force Cable, those are in Class 8, and they pay on a percentage. Now, you've got your contractors, which is what makes up the majority of Class 8, and they pay $50 on the first 2,000 and then 50 cents for each additional 1,000. So it's the lowest class per 1,000. When you're looking just at the contractors. Did I answer your question?
Well, I was just trying to figure out, you know, what paid more and who paid less.
So okay. There wasn't any change within Class 8, is that right?
Class 8, you would not see the changes.
Right, okay.
The rest of the classes, 1 through 7, a lot of changes. Hmm. Businesses moving in and out of the classes. After doing the conversion, we got to looking at the numbers, and the revenue by making the changes from the SIC to NAICS would result in less revenue being collected with a straight conversion. The finance department, we recommend a revenue neutral conversion. And by revenue neutral, that would allow the city of Aiken to maintain the current level of revenue. And if we go to the next slide, you'll see what fees we would have to adopt to have a revenue neutral conversion. And that's what you see illustrated on this page.
Is there not a level of income where after a certain point the rate goes down?
You mean if a specific business? Okay. There are points that the rate per 1,000 drops. On the first $1 million, every business pays 100% of the per 1,000 rate. Okay, once you go and you exceed $1 million, the rate per 1,000 for the receipts over the million drops by 5%. And at $2 million, it drops by another 5%. And it continues to do that until you're paying at a 55% rate. Does that make sense?
Say that again.
Okay. Her question was?
Yeah, I got the question.
Okay.
I just want to get the numbers.
Okay. On the first $1 million.
All businesses pay the same. They pay
100% of
this number.
Of that number. Okay. Once you exceed $1 million, the rate drops by 5%. At each $1 million mark, it continues to drop at 5% until you reach a point that you're paying a 55% rate.
For each million?
At each $1 million mark, it drops by 5%.
So does it drop, the entire rate drops by 5%?
No. On the first $1 million.
The amount above the million.
Or amount above the million,
above
exactly.
The 2 million.
Yeah, okay. You got it.
Just as an example, Walmart, okay, mm-hmm. which Lord knows what their sales are, but they have they pay the same according to their classification, and each $1 million will drop down until it gets to 55%
percent of the original rate.
And it stays. They
at
did
that forever.
They did 55 million in sales. 55% would go on as they drop it down, and
right.
then it, and
they
it pays the
profit. 55 million or 150 million, it would be at the 55% rate once it got to it.
Okay.
Okay, one thing that that we did to kind of show you what the changes would mean to our businesses is we did a couple slides where we've got examples of businesses, say a restaurant in the first one with $500,000 in receipts. Okay, under the old ordinance with a SIC code, they would pay $453. Okay, with the revenue neutral rate adjustment, under the SIC code, they would pay $473, so they would see an increase of 4%. A hotel, which is one of the businesses that drops to a lower rate class, a hotel with $1 million under the old ordinance with the SIC code would pay $1,033. Under the new or the proposed new ordinance, the next code with a revenue neutral adjustment, they'd pay $918. So they would see a savings of 11%. A doctor's office with receipts of $1 million under the SIC code would have paid $1,807. Once the conversion was done using the revenue neutral rates, they would pay $1,692. So they would see a savings of 6%. A barber with $50,000 in receipts under the SIC code would have paid $132. Under the next code, they would pay $109, seeing a savings of 18%. A general retail, and by general retail, that would be like your example, the Walmarts, Targets, Roses, stores like that. If they had $15 million in receipts under the SIC code, they would have paid $8,953. Under the next code, they move up a rate class, and with a revenue neutral conversion, they would have paid $10,953. So they would see an increase of 22%. Can we go to the next slide? Thank you. Okay. Security broker. This was one of the very few businesses that made more than a one-step increase. They would actually move up two classes. And their fee before would have been $692. Under the next with the revenue neutral, it would have been $872. So they would see an increase of 26%. We really don't have that many businesses that fall into this category. Most businesses that sell securities also offer other financial services, including insurance, which would put them in a higher rate class anyway. So, you know, moving those two steps, that's a big jump, but it's very, very few businesses. The furniture stores, if they had had $1 million in receipts, would have paid $1,188 under the SIC code. Under the next, it would have been $918. So they would see a reduction in 23% by doing this conversion. Auto repair at $500,000 under the SIC would have paid $613. Under the next, $553. 10% reduction there. Building supplies, this is going to be your companies like Lowe's, Home Depot, whatnot. Under the SIC code, they would have paid $6,616. They move up a rate class under the NAICS and would actually pay $8,093 on that same amount, an increase of 22%. Okay. We did these comparisons to show you, you know, the difference between the SIC and NAICS and how it would affect our businesses. We'd like to show you with this next slide how the city of Aiken would compare against other cities after the conversion. As you can see, the general merchandise stores in the city of Aiken with gross receipts of $5,454,562. We'd kind of be right in the middle with the cities that we've got here as examples. Four of them would pay a higher amount if they had been in that city, and in three cities they would have paid a lower amount. The same business with the same receipts.
Lex,
ma'am,
have these cities already converted to the NAISC?
Let's see. No, ma'am. Many of these are using SIC. Greenville and Columbia, I don't believe either of them are on SIC or NAICS. I think both of theirs are, they've just got their own way of doing it.
They did what?
They've got a different way of doing it. They don't use the SIC or NAICS. They've developed their own.
Oh, really? Columbia and Greenville have developed their own?
They've got a different way of doing it. I'm not familiar with it.
And they've set it up themselves?
I'm not sure. I don't know the details on how they've done theirs.
Do you know, Mr. Bates?
Historically, Columbia has not changed its system for many, many years. It probably has an unconstitutional system to go on with it. Greenville did, and then they tinkered with it, so it's probably unconstitutional.
Could you tell me which one so I could compare those to what we were getting ready to do?
Clemson has gone to the next, so I don't know if these figures came before or after they converted within the last year. They've known the next, so.
These are not updated in the last year.
Okay.
Well, you speak of constitutional, Roy. Is it constitutional that we should have one of these? Or is a city able, a municipality able, to come up with some other system?
Well, you can come up with some other system. There's nothing that says you have to use this system.
Okay.
The problem is your rate classes have to be based on a rational basis. In other words, you have to have a rational basis for including this group of citizens in one class and another group in another class.
Right.
And that's what is lacking in those systems historically.
And these are the classes, though, that you have to meet. I mean, we couldn't arbitrarily come up with our own system and move businesses from one or to one class or another.
You could come up with a different system that had 10 rate classes if you wanted to. But once you establish that and have a rational basis for putting these businesses in class one, you can't shift them without destroying the integrity of the system.
And we'd have to have our own study done about how it's done. We'd have to explain. You just can't do it. You've got to have a reason, and you have a study that says this is rational. And
is that what Greenville did?
Beg your pardon?
Is that what Greenville did?
No, they adopted this basic system to start with, but then they started tinkering with it.
So it has been done.
Yeah, they've done it, and fortunately, they've not been challenged. But you don't want to follow Greenville or Columbia if you don't.
Right. Well, some of these, it concerns me that some of these increases are so high.
Me too.
I mean, it may be only a few, but goodness, 26%, 22%. And how in this world do we go about explaining something like that? That's what I want to hear.
Well, the IRS statistics plus the reclassification on the legal system produce that result. So what you're doing is updating your ordinance to make it more equitable in today's economic picture. And it simply means if you didn't do that, these businesses would be getting a windfall when you compare what they should have been paying to what others.
Yeah.
In short, you're saying that they're getting the revenue. There's been a revenue increase.
Right.
And we're adjusting.
And today's economic situation, the statistics show that their profit-making ability has changed since the SIC.
Yeah, I know that, but I have a problem with that kind of generalization just because in the business that my family's in, I can see that in some areas of the business the overhead is huge and in other areas it's not huge just by the nature of the different activities that go on even in one general classification. And and when you think of small businesses of any sort, frankly, their overhead is probably always going to be proportionally larger than that of a Walmart or a great big chain, because they just don't have the buying power. They don't have the clout that it takes to get the deals. And when I brought this up, I never intended to raise anyone's business license fees. That was not the intent. My feeling was that if we want to encourage businesses to stay in this city, which I think we do, and I don't think we will if their business license fees go up 26%, like Mayor Kavanaugh said, that's not going to make anybody happy. Then what we want to do is make these fees fair, and I think we should lower them, frankly. That's always been my goal. I think that we should take a step forward where other cities haven't and say, we want you in town. We are grateful that you are here. We want you to stay here paying property taxes. Business property taxes are higher than any others. What we'd like to do is make, and I want to see these made more fair. I mean, I sat here during the last hearing and listened to a business person with an income, describe an income that revealed that person's business rate was one-tenth of what my business rate is. And I don't see anything right about that. And I want to be sure that it would be my goal to see that doesn't happen anymore, and that we lower rates. And this business of people that make millions getting a lower rate than somebody that's not making millions, that bothers me too. What's the rationale for that?
Well, the rationale is, like Walmart and like a food store, their profit percentage is 1.2%, food store is about 1.2%, 1.3%. In other words, your expenses are more. So that's the rationale here. In other words, if you got a professional person that's making, his expenses are 50%, but his net income is 50%, then he obviously has, you make more net income, so that's the rationale. Walmart, I don't know what their percentage is, probably 2 or 3, 4%. Problem is they sell $100 million worth of stuff. The problem we got is this. We have to make it a system. It has to be either we do it or we use some other system. Now, Jane, I think what we need to be doing is, one of the reasons I want to look at this is to be fair.
Yes.
I don't think it's if somebody, and I think what's happened here is I mean I had some comments about, well, this group of individuals is only paying that and this group is paying this. Well, this is supposed to be fair. You see one group moving to one and they're going to pay a little bit more, and the other ones are going to go and be paying lower. What I'd like to see us do is maybe we give a rebate back to where it's neutral. In other words, we say we made 1.5 million last year. If we're going to make 1.65 or 1.7 million this year, we do what, and I said this before, and I didn't, nobody took up on it. I said, let's give a check back. Let's say we're going to have a rebate back when it exceeds X amount. What's wrong with that?
When it exceeds what amount?
Our budget was 1.55 million, and we've already taken in 1,650,000. We say if it goes over this amount, we have a check back, just like they do it if you're in Aiken Co-op, you get a check every year if they exceed a certain amount. To me, that would be fair where it is revenue neutral. But I don't see how we don't have some adjustments to some system. Either we come up with our own system, which means we're going to have to spend a lot of money to do it, but you got to have the system. At least we can defend what this says.
Well, we could use the system and just make the rates different, make the rates closer together, make the rates less of a disparity between one.
But
one
you got to be.
The
there's got to be consistency in the rates too, doesn't it?
Consistency in the increase in rate from one class to another that has increased by the same income. Your problem with what you suggest is that you already have rates that produce a certain amount of revenue and have a certain distance between the rate classes. If you start trying to decrease that, you really will see some terrific adjustments.
Right. What do you mean, adjustments?
You'll see some terrific increases in some and decreases in others. The disparity will be greater.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a question for Roy. It was mentioned IRS and IRS statistics.
Right.
based on, it's obvious there are some issues here with what's being proposed here. It's said that we have to have some system. If we don't, the system that we design, does that have to be in line with IRS and its statistics? It does not have to be.
No, it does not have to be. But you have to have some rational basis for determining the classification. The reason the IRS statistics are used is because the state Supreme Court has said you can't use local business practices as your basis. You
okay.
have to have a broader statistical base. So what this system does is use the broadest possible nationwide base. The other thing that you have to do is consider the Supreme Court language that says that business license is a privilege tax and it's measured by the ability to pay. And the ability to pay is determined from the ability to make a profit using these statistics. That's how that was generated. And so the system's been tested in the twice. In fact, in an Aiken case and a North Charleston case, in both cases, the Supreme Court upheld it as a constitutional system.
But the tax is on gross receipts.
Beg your pardon?
The tax is on gross receipts.
Yeah, the tax is measured by gross receipts. That's the only basis the legislature will allow you to do it, except in the car route like railroad.
So though the categories as the new, you know, these two different systems that we've talked about, though those are supposed to be based upon the IRS projections of what profit margins are in certain types of businesses, right?
In terms of which rate class you're going in, if you have a lower
right.
ability to make a profit, you have a lower rate class.
But the amount you pay is gross receipts, whether you're making profit or losing money.
That's correct. You can't change that. You couldn't adopt a system that you did it on any other basis.
Let me ask a question about NAICS. I would imagine that this is a long-standing group. They've studied it. They've looked at trends. They've looked at circumstances. Is that not the case?
This is simply a tool for putting businesses that have similar operational characteristics into the same group for the purposes of gathering statistics done by the United States government in cooperation with Canada and Mexico. That's why it's called the North American Industry Classification System.
Okay, but I assume they have studied this. Have they not studied it?
It has nothing to do with business license. It's done for the purpose of the government gathering statistics and being able to publish those statistics in a form that you can have a meaningful understanding of the relationship between different classes of business. That's all that is.
I guess my question is this a reputable classification system? Is it reputable?
It is the one used by the federal government. Here in Canada and Mexico is the only one that exists about it.
Okay, and
after the check I just wrote, I don't think the IRS.
I'm trying to make the point that whoever gave us SIC and whoever gave us NAICS, the two systems that we're looking at today, I'm assuming that they have put a little bit more time into it than we have, or am I wrong about that?
Oh, yes. But all it does is say these businesses have similar operational characteristics,
okay.
So they should be put in this group for statistical purposes. If you gather statistics on this group, then you've got apples and apples rather than apples and oranges. That's all it does. If it wasn't done for tax purposes, the rate class that you're in would determine for internal revenue service statistics, actual income tax returns, so gross net income to produce the index of ability to make a profit. This goes back to our state Supreme Court that says that's the way you should do it.
But if I may, I think the point is that
NAIC is used on each IRS form as the basis for the classifications.
It's integrated in that sense.
Well, I guess that's what I'm trying to get to, and I'm trying to rationalize why we should try to come up with our own system if there is one that has been used extensively and has found to be reputable. Why do we want to tweak it? And if we're coming from a system where someone has said, you know, it's old, it's outdated, it's outmoded, it hasn't been changed in so many years, and they're not going to change it because there's a replacement system, I'm wondering, why do we need to tweak it if it's already been established that so many people are using it? Why do we as a body need to tweak a system that's apparently a pretty good system? Shouldn't the IRS... No, I'm not going to go there with that. I want to say, shouldn't... Well, I guess they ought to know that if you make $15 million, that your ability to pay your expenses and your taxes would leave you enough to pay that, but then maybe I should not assume that.
They don't make that determination.
Well,
publish the statistics.
For example, when you look at the general retail with Walmart, Target, Roses, as you've given examples, with 22% increase, and then the 22% increase comes with the building supply and possibly Lowe's and Home Depot. Those gross receipts would have to indicate that they have earned enough, that this is what we're indicating, that their percentage of change should be. Is that not right?
Well, it's a two-edged thing. You've got two factors at work here. It calls them to be in a different rate class for housing. One is going through the new tax system. The other is more recent IRS is perhaps a different level of ability to pay. And then you've got a third factor in what's proposed here, because the tax rate is being proposed as an increase over the present rate. So you take all three of those factors into consideration. That's why they would be paying more.
Let me ask.
I thought this was income neutral.
This is revenue neutral
revenue
to the city.
Some go up, some go down.
The bottom line is the same.
The bottom line is after all the changes are made, if we'd had the exact same receipts reported with a SIC system and the NAIC system, we would have taken in the same amount of revenue.
So no matter, we would have seen an increase anyway.
What we did is we changed the classifications from the SIC classification to the NAICS and put them all on a spreadsheet and determined what the rates would have to be for the new NAICS system to equal the same amount of revenue as we collected in fiscal year 2004 with the exact same receipts.
Okay.
That's what we did.
Let me ask what I think is a simple thing, but maybe I can understand it a little bit better. If we look at this page here that's got Security Federal at the top and then furniture stores as an example, I'm just picking that.
Security broker.
A broker, excuse me. Suppose we said, hey, we don't like that 26% increase. We want to lower that. We want to cut that. Let's say we're going to cut it down 10%, and we're going to add it to the furniture stores.
Then you have destroyed the integrity of the system.
Okay.
And that's not possible.
Okay. You answered my question. We can't do that.
Not if you want to keep the integrity of the system.
Now, we can stay with the SIC, though, if we want to, can't we?
If you stay with that, yes.
Okay.
But what you do is you get further and further behind the economic situation.
And
someday, when you do have to...
And there's no way to take step by step and get there in a matter of years, right? 5 years. Okay, there's no way we can stay revenue neutral and do it. Okay.
Can you move
Right, yeah, I understand.
staying revenue neutral was not the only thing we ever talked about in this thing. We have Roger's letter here from the 23rd of August where it said there are a lot of different options, and revenue neutral was one of those options.
But we did say we bring it back to council like it's been done and revenue neutral, and then we talk about what we want to do from there.
Right.
That's exactly what we said.
It seems to me that the page that we could do something on, unless, Mr. Bates, you need to tell me if there's no way, is on the page that says Finance Department's recommendation. I don't think we need to reinvent the wheel and reinvent these classifications. I'm not looking to do that. Leave the classifications the same. But let's adjust base fees and rates and all that sort of thing.
Actually, if I may, we said that if we just implemented everything and used the old rates, there would be a loss.
Yes.
How much?
About $40,000.
Huh?
Roughly $40,000.
Only?
Correct.
But aren't we missing something here? The SIC, if we stay with the SIC, it hasn't been updated.
Correct.
And the new system is updated, and according to IRS, it's studying, and just, I'm not beating up on attorneys here, okay, but if attorneys and doctors are in the same code now.
Under the
SIC code. And what the new system is telling us is that the doctors have moved to an area that they don't quite make as much as they used to because all the things they're having to pay, like the insurance and like that. And what they've said is that the lawyers are basically saying we're staying where they were. Okay? But remember, part of this, you want to be fair. So if we keep the sick, we're not being fair as far as the ability to pay now. Now, you can argue about that we shouldn't be it by the ability to pay, but that's the way the law is. So we got to keep a system. I want a system that's fair.
Right.
And in your opinion, both of your opinion, which of these classifications is the fair system?
Thanks.
All right. That's, we want to be fair. Now we have to figure out how are we going to try to pass some relief on, and how do we do that? And I think that's maybe where we can tweak it. But I just assume one of the problems we got is we start tweaking it, and then things happen, and the revenue for next year is $1.4 million or $1 million, whatever. I'm just guessing here, but. Can we say our budget is X for the business license fee, and once we know that the revenue that comes in is $1 million, say it's $1,550,000, and the revenue that comes in from the taxes is $1,700,000 or $1,600,000, either from growth or whatever, can we rebate that according to the percentages of what they pay? In other words, if somebody pays $6,000 and you take $150,000 divided by it, and you get an 8% reduction, in other words, you send a check out to them, can we do that?
Yes, sir, you could, but you need to factor into that your administrative cost from doing
what, whatever. But that would be
the ability to pay it. Our software.
We don't have the ability?
No rebates with our software.
What would it take to get that ability?
You would have to ask for a change. You would have to get in line for it because we're probably one of the only cities that would request that change in software, so it could be as long as 9 months away. And
Think about what this would say to the business people. Say, you know, we took in more money than we had budgeted, and guess what? We're going to give you a check back. To me, that's something that I would say, yeah, maybe we have to spend a little money on software. But if they see it and they say, you know, they're at least trying to do something rather than, well, they got another $150,000 and let's go spend it on something.
Or you could do even better. You could do what they do. They try to anticipate and give their customers their product at the lowest cost they can. And they don't, customers aren't going to be happy if you say, well, I'm charging you a little more now, but then I'll give you a rebate. Of course, I'm going to take away my administrative fees and all that stuff. I mean, if we want to be businesslike here and sensitive to business, we need to figure out how we can lower our costs to them to start out with, and not this rebate stuff and special programs and all this kind of nonsense.
I would support that. Somebody has to show me how.
But you know what, Pat? You know what's going on here? We went to the citizens of this county. We put forth how many millions of dollars for to increase sales tax, to pay for projects that we could not pay for out of budget, and then we're going to tell them we have enough money now, let's give some back to businesses? How does that look? I mean, we've got people paying sales taxes. We have put forth a sales tax to pay for projects, and then we want to find a way to give people money as if we don't need it, all the cuts we've had.
No.
I mean, let's
oh, that's
all I'm saying.
I like Jane's idea. I don't like giving the rate rebate back. I like a system designed to be fair in the very beginning, before you even get started. This is what you're going to pay. This is what the percentage is, so that folks won't get a check 1 year that's this amount, and next year they get less. And then Rogers being asked, and the staff, why did I not get as much as I did last year? So we're creating more work for you, too, because you've got to send out all these checks. So let's have it designed in a fair way in the very beginning before we even get started.
And speaking of fairness, I come back to the question, not revenue neutral. If we were just going to make this adjustment to make it fair for all of the taxpayers, then why don't we just let the chips fall where they may, and we take the same, we don't let it be revenue neutral, we take exactly what that new revised system produces. If it's only $40,000 a year, I don't even know why we're fighting that particular thing.
Well, again, you're talking about that, that there's still going to be increases in that scenario.
Yeah,
there will be maybe not 26%, it might only be 22%.
It's ultimately fair.
And we could do that. It's just not a revenue neutral. We'll lose money.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let me ask the question.
If that's what
council
wants, then we could do that.
Can you adjust?
I don't want a system designed to lose money, Roger. I can speak up for that.
Well, that's what we're saying here, is we go ahead and take that sheet, that this one here that talks about finance.
Right.
Basically, we'd be lowering the rate per thousand. And we'd lose, as was stated, I think it's $44,000.
Roughly 40, yeah.
And so,
what if
we could lose 50,000 or 100,000 or whatever you want. We just need to know, do you want us to be revenue neutral, or do we want to go ahead and lower it for the businesses?
The question, can you take, if we go with this thing that we've taken in 1 million, whatever the number is, can we tweak each one of them as far as what rate is paid and do it equally, and would that be fair? In other words,
yes.
you take the 150, if, say for instance we take 101.7 million or whatever, that's $150,000, and we say, all right, we want to be, everybody gets a piece of that, but in the percentages that they're paying, in other words, you lower the percentages of each one and you use that. Can you do that?
You take your rate, let me just answer that. If you take your rate per thousand that you see here, and the difference between each rate is 15 cents. If you want to lower that so the rate per thousand is only 14 cents, but it's got to be consistent. We can't lower from one rate class to another. One's going to be 14 cents, one's going to be 10 cents, one's going to be 20 cents. It's going to have to be in increments of, right now it's 15 cents, make it 14, 13, 12, or you can make it 16, 17, 18.
And what I'm suggesting is that you're projecting what you want to know what the revenue is going to be, okay, and then you adjust that to get down to the $1,550,000, which is the budgeted number, which is what we, wouldn't that be fair?
Mr. Mayor, I'm curious to know what Don thinks. He's a business owner here in terms of what.
Well, you know, I've bought 28 business licenses, and I don't like paying any more tax to anybody. I think it's the most fair tax we have. And I know my business doesn't do $500,000, but if I did do $500,000, I don't believe I'd complain about another $180 on my business license. You know, I think this new system is fair to everybody. It's a fee that I've just become accustomed to pay for, and I have had no business person come to me and complain about the cost of their license. And I know a lot of business people.
And I have had 100 business people.
You have called a lot of people. You have you.
Don Sprouls, there's about as I put up with about as much accusation from you as I'm going to stand.
No, you
and I am telling you something now. Oh, I know it. Yeah. I know that.
Let's not have that but, here.
No, I haven't heard anything yet.
You call people and ask them. No one has called me. You know, if somebody's got a complaint, they call somebody.
I would like to make a statement. I do not call people. When I go shopping downtown in May and June, and these licenses, and I don't care whether you believe me or not, but when I go downtown in May and June, and these business licenses are being considered, merchants are not happy. When I talk to people and they realize that everybody isn't paying the same rate. And I guarantee you right now, if there's ever an article in one of the newspapers in Aiken that tells the difference in the rates that different sorts of businesses pay, you're going to not hear the end of those complaints. People don't realize any of this. They think they all pay the same rate.
I don't agree with that.
Well, I know you don't. But could I finish and then you can say anything
yes,
you want,
ma'am.
Of course. But the point is, that I have heard these complaints, which is why I brought this up. I was shocked myself to find that my rate was 10 times what another business person's rate was. I don't see any reason that we cannot look at these rate classes, use the new system just the way it is, lower the base fees. If we are giving a deal to businesses that we want to keep our businesses in town. We don't want donut holes. We don't want urban sprawl. We want to keep our businesses in Aiken. And one of the ways to do that is to show that we are friendly to business and that we understand the pressures that they have on them. And I run a small business as well. And I hear all the time from other small business people, not in my husband's profession necessarily, that this is a galling tax that makes them upset with municipal government. And I think we can do something about it. I think we can afford to. I think when we are a city that now has, what, $16 million instead of 14, that we've got money here. I mean, and I don't think it should just go to businesses. I think it should go to finished projects that we don't have money, that we don't think we have money for right now.
Jane, what's the 14 and $16 million?
I thought she said there was one point in time, Roger, tell me where the $14 million figure came from as far as the revenue.
We have in reserves that kind of money.
And it has grown to $16 million now, is that correct?
Possibly. It's probably grown, but you know that's reserved for different
projects. And that water and sewer, and that's everything.
Yeah, by law, we have to have a certain amount of reserve.
Sure.
Now, we can always bring that to the table and talk about it.
Yes, that's all I'm asking.
And if we do that, fine. But I'd like to ask our staff, since you brought it up, Jane, we lose businesses leaving town and whatever. How many businesses do we know of that have left town because of our business license? I see them coming in.
I don't know. Anybody tell me they were leaving because of that?
Yeah.
I think in fairness, though, there are some businesses that will locate just outside the city just so they don't have to pay it. Now, we can tell you what
to do. They're going to do it anyway.
They're going to do it, but I mean, that is a problem, and what it is, it's a question of fairness, and it's a question of how do we make sure that we try to pass them along. I think if we tweak the individual percentages, we'll get there I think my concern is that if we budget one line, that we at least that it's the same, and I think we can try to tweak that in there and just adjust it on the percentages. I think that's be able to be done. That was my only concern, but there are businesses that I think locate outside. But we even had one of our construction people, it was Ms. Bradley, said that you know, she's been in the city all these years and she wasn't happy to pay the tax, but she gets the services from the city. But to say that there isn't some concern out there as far as business tax, I mean, I haven't heard it as much as Jane, but there is some concern about I want to locate here rather than pay that business tax. But that's, you know, I know that, Don. I mean, I know, I don't think
I can sit with a car dealership doing millions of dollars. That's why Satcher Ford was outside the city limits 25 years ago. But to small businesses, it's not that much of a difference.
We got on general retail a 26% increase, and I assume that directly affects a lot of the small downtown business people, many of whom are struggling to get along in their businesses. So
the miscellaneous the miscellaneous retail actually stays in class one. It doesn't move.
It's not going to move. No.
These are the big box businesses that are being hit.
Oh.
Miscellaneous retail stays in class one.
The percentage of increase are the bigger businesses.
The general retail.
General merchandise rather than.
Well, we said early on that we would be willing to look at it revenue neutral and talk about what possibly we could see in a budget that could be cut and talk about that.
Yeah.
We can still do that.
Yeah,
I mean, Roger is prepared, maybe not today, but, you know, another meeting, another work session, to give us lists of things which he feels as city manager that we could possibly. I mean, if council wants to, we've given up something when we do this, obviously. It might be some services, it might be some landscaping, it might be whatever. But we can look at that, and the majority is going to rule, whatever the case may be. We can do that if council wants to do that.
So aren't we here tonight to decide whether we're going to adopt this system or not? Is that the purpose of this move?
I just don't think, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think the system is logical. We've got to update. There is that part. I don't think that's a debate. But setting the actual tax to the individuals is what we're talking about. And again, I come back to, under the change, there are winners and losers amongst the taxpayers, and there ought to be a winner or loser as far as the city is concerned, and I think the city could afford to at least implement the system and absorb that loss without, is not that great in the first place. Here we are. We got some people who've really lost quite a bit in this, or their percentage is very great as far as the increase. And then on top of that, because we want to stay neutral, we're going to raise the rates a little bit too for each class. Does it make sense? We're going to implement it, but do it equally.
I don't understand. How do we do that? I mean, what?
Well, at the rates we had. The same rates that applied to these,
but they're still going to go up. Even if we keep the same rates we have, they're still going to go up.
Some people are going to go up, some are going to go down. We're going to lose a little, but not very much. But we're taking out the defense of we're not going to lose anything. But there are winners and losers.
I never have. What I like to know is how much it is. I mean, rather than just implement it, you need to take this back and tweak it from the percentages and let us look at exactly what it's going to be. If it's a $40,000 less, if we keep this, but this winners and losers thing, I don't know how do we balance that.
You'd have to lower everything probably by 15-20%, about $200,000 to go ahead and make no one lose money. That means that instead of some being at 20-some percent increase, you'll have some that'll be at 25%, 30%, 35% decrease. Because, everything has to be consistent. We can't just lower the ones that are going to have the increase.
Right.
Everything has to be lowered.
Right.
It depends on how much money you want to lose and where do we make that money up from. Let me just very quickly, the budget that we have right now that will be presented to you in a few weeks has revenue coming in for business license tax at $1,650,000. And that's based on what we're getting in this year with the growth that we're having. So we're projecting $1,650,000. Again, revenue neutral, no increase, no nothing. Right now the budget, in the way it's being projected to you, has put in the services that you'd asked. Spay-neuter program, hiring someone to help us get the ILS and some of these other highway projects, keeping the horse patrol and some of these other things that you want it. And there's no increases. We don't have any garbage increase. We don't have any sewer increases, water increases. There's no increase projected. So if we want to lower it, and again, I'm here to do whatever council asks, then we just need to sit down either line item by line item or some areas that we have here that I could talk about
and reduce those or remove those from the budget, or we could look at raising, like we said, we're going to raise up our garbage rates until they become revenue neutral. Mm-hmm. And we still have another $3.50 to go based on my projections today. It might be a little bit less than that as we implement the roll carts, but again, we're still talking a several dollar increase. And, you know, so if you want to lower this and increase garbage or reduce and look at some elimination of things, I have a list of things that would not affect your basic services, but would affect something. You know, like newsletters. We never had a newsletter before. We got one now. Our neighborhood organizations that we have involved into, some things at Hopeland Gardens that we're now doing, design guidelines that we talked about using architect, facade grants, you know, on and on and on. But again, these are things that would affect what some people would perceive as services, but other people may not perceive as services. But
Roger, if the when we say revenue neutral on this, it's the $1,650,000. Is that the number?
That is what we're projecting right now. This year, we're getting in. Currently, if you look at the, I think it's the second, actually the very first page of the thing. Through the month of March, and we still have April, May, and June to collect business licenses from new businesses coming in, we have already received this year, in the first 9 months, $1,616,000. By the end of this year, by June 30th, we'll receive around $1,650,000.
Pretty close. Quite a small difference in 3 months.
You get your largest amount. All your existing businesses get their licenses in June, and most of them pay it in June, July. Mm-hmm. Then the rest of the year, you pick up $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 a month because of new businesses that come in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We've been getting in probably an average of about $10,000 to $15,000 a month. So by the time June 30th comes, we'll be at over $1,650,000. So next year's budget, I have put in $1,650,000. Assuming, again, a neutral revenue. If we get more businesses that come in, we'll actually get in more revenue in that account.
Question, if we went through each line and said we got $1,650,000 and we wanted to keep it at the $1,550,000, which was budgeted, mm-hmm. could you run that and see then what are the increases per? Those would adjust.
We could do
those
that.
Would adjust the percentage increase and obviously actually increase
and
the.
And then we just say need to look at where does that.
What does that? Add, you see what I'm saying, Mayor?
Else, or we decrease.
Part of it could be that your percentage, because you're some of these may be paying a smaller amount, that their rate increase was $10, but 22%. You need to look at what the numbers
are.
Yeah,
we could do that. That'd be no problem. We do that.
I would like to see that, and that way we say, all right, we're not here to raise the business. And I agree with you, Jane. We weren't here to raise the thing. That's for sure. I understand why we did it revenue neutral, because you had to start somewhere. So can we get that number, and then we'll look at it and say, all right, this is and what how we have to adjust each one of the categories percentage-wise to come down. And if we want to tweak it some more and do it across the board to lower it even more. But think about this. What about property taxes? We can say that, you know, we haven't raised property taxes in 10 years, but people's taxes have gone up because your assessments have gone up. So, you know, we can just say the business tax, but think about the property taxes people pay. The other thing, the state just passed a small business, at least if the governor signs it and the Senate passes it, you know, going from, I think it's going from 6% to 5% for the small proprietor, which is going to help the small business owners, which is good. Now, that doesn't help us, but it certainly helps the small business proprietor as far as what the taxes he pays. So can we get those percentages and then look down the, but I agree with Dick, I believe we're going to adjust it. We got to pick the fair one to pay. To pick is the one that the NAI, that one rather than the other. And that's the key.
Lex, I want to make sure that I heard you correctly. Regarding our merchants downtown, mm-hmm. you said that those rates would remain the same, that we don't have an anticipated increase under the new system for these individuals. Is that right?
We have businesses in different rate classes in the downtown,
right,
depending on what they do.
Okay.
But
and a general merchandise.
Well, a general merchandise like Walmart, Target, and whatnot,
right,
they move up to class two.
Right.
Miscellaneous retail,
mm-hmm,
which is the majority of the businesses you'll find downtown,
mm-hmm,
stay in class one.
Okay, which means that would pretty much stay the same.
Well, be very close. There's a slight adjustment.
Right. Okay.
But if we take the $100,000 and adjust in categories, okay, they would actually see a slight reduction then.
If we were to reduce the rate from what it is currently, them being in the same rate class, they would see.
So to say the $100,000, if we say we want to make revenue neutral, we're going to be taking $1,000,006, but we want to make it the $1,000,005. Those small businesses would see less tax. Have to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Assuming their gross receipts didn't make up for that.
Exactly.
In which case they would be unhappy.
Yeah, they wouldn't complain about taking in more money.
Let me just clarify something that I don't understand. On this finance department's recommendation, is this base fee the current base fee for the category?
Yes.
It's the same as what we had last year?
Yes.
Okay, and the rate per thousand is the same rate? No. What was it last year?
It's four cents higher
on this than it was last year.
For each category. All right.
4 cents. 4 cents per $1,000.
And the base fee is for the first how many thousand?
First $2,000.
Yeah, I think what Pat suggested, if we could.
We had asked for
the raw data to begin with, and I think, in fact, we're coming back to that. I mean, I guess it was decided that we didn't need to see that, but I think it was useful to us.
And then, Roger, what you show us is what the percentage increases per class, adjusting it to that. Okay, and that shouldn't be that good.
And we could do that, but then when I come back at the budget time, we'll have to look at what areas in the budget we want to take out, or what do we want to increase.
Then we will make a determination, is that enough? Do we want to try to cut it even further? And that's your job, is to tell us, all right, if you want to cut the business tax by another $100,000.
What I'm saying is, do you want me to go ahead and start cutting the budget right now by $100,000, or raising up like garbage fees to the dollar?
No, that's not. I would rather see where we stand and what the percentages increases are going to be and what the percentage decreases are going to be, and then I'll make a judgment. Personally, I would make a judgment saying, is that reasonable? I don't. That's my feeling.
Yeah.
You know, one thing.
So, considering this, look at the finance department's recommendation of the rate of 89 cents. For each penny, you adjust that across the board, you affect total revenue by approximately $10,000.
A little over 11.
Yeah.
Okay. That's how the
11,050. 11,000 for every penny.
So that'll give you some feel if you want to start adjusting things. If you come down 4 cents, you're going to have $44,000.
So if you come down that $100,000, we're talking about 10 cents. We'll actually be 5 or 6 cents lower than what we have currently today. We went up 4 cents.
Right. So if we took away.
If we go down by 100,000, then we're actually going to reduce it by 5 or 6 cents. Then we'll be lowering everybody's fee by 5 or 6 cents.
To me, that's where we need to start, and then we can look at it and say what's the percentage increases and what's the percentage decreases, and then it's going to be our job to say, is that fair? Is that reasonable? And we don't think it is.
Any difference now?
That's where he's coming at.
You what?
Understand? Where do we get the $100,000 from? In the budget.
My point is, we had a budget when we said we're going to take in $1,550,000, and that's what we want to get from the business tax. That's what we sat down here and we looked at it and said, that's a good number. What I'm saying is, maybe we just don't run that $300,000 surplus that we always have, you know. If we make our budget on the finance and we watch our expenses, then we should be okay. That's all I'm saying. If you see what I'm saying, Roger, maybe we don't have that $200,000 surplus.
Of course, we don't know that till sometime in July after the budget's already completed, whether you have a surplus or not.
But we know that we got $1,613,000 right now. We projected $1,550,000. I'd like to adjust the rates to where we at least know that our budgeted numbers for business tax. That's all I'm saying, and we should be able to do that.
I think it's interesting. I agree with you, Pat. I agree with everyone that's talked about, let's study this thing and see where we can reduce it, no matter what. But it's still interesting to look at this tax comparison. And we've got 62 cities, if you will, as you go down each category, that are higher than we are, and only 8 that are lower. So that still puts us so low compared to these other cities, and we're one of the fastest growing cities in the state. And so we're still growing, you know, despite the thoughts that we're higher in some categories, and which this obviously says that we're not very much higher, only in 8 out of 100 and out of 70, if you will, if you add those two numbers together. Out of 70, where there's only 8 that are lower than us, 62 are higher than us. So that kind of puts it in perspective to me. Now, if we can cut somewhere and still maintain without a property tax increase for the 17th straight year in the city, and you can, people can talk about that all they want, but it is a true thing. We have not had a property tax millage increase in the city of Aiken, and it's going to be 17 years.
But we've had property tax increases.
Well, in the city millage, what is it that you don't understand about what I said?
No, I understood
city
the problem.
Millage. Right,
Mr. Mayor, we understand, but the millage is worth a lot more. I understand.
Of course, I do. But we have not, and we've lowered it many times.
In the 17 years I've lived in the city, my taxes have not gone up.
Mine are lower than they used to be.
But I haven't made any changes to my houses either.
At what age do you get that,
Mayor?
65. Homestead exemption helps a lot.
I have one more question that's bothering me. And it's the rate class 8.
Okay.
It does bother me. Those rates are set, as I understand, there's an arbitrariness to them. Is that correct? I mean, who decides?
Well, for instance, some of the businesses that you'll find in rate class 8 are insurance companies that actually write the policies, and you see the telecommunications. Those, for instance, are both set by the state legislature. We don't have control over that.
I understand.
That's why they fall into Class 8. You'll find similar.
Right. It's the contractors I'm kind of getting at, and I thought the real estate was in there one time, too. But
No, real estate is in Class 8.
But contractors are in this 8, but that's not the consequence of a NAIC. Is it part of the NAIC, or how do we actually decide that rate? Why is it not consistent in its steps with the others?
The reason contractors put in Class 8 in the system is that you need some additional language to say what happens as far as subcontractors are concerned and reporting requirements. That's why they were put in Class 8. The normal thing to do is assign them a rate that's equal to what they would normally be charged if they were put in the regular system. And you've chosen to have a lower rate.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, I can't answer why you do that. But the system was not designed to give you special treatment.
For contractors.
Well, so where should they be?
Are you saying
they should be in Class 3? So the Class 3 rate would be the one that would normally be applied to this.
Why? And how does that come about? What is the purpose of it? We had that in the previous setup too, didn't it?
It hasn't changed, and the adoption of those rates is prior to me. I don't know.
But I don't know why. And does it? If we're talking fairness, does that seem fair? Would it be more? Wouldn't it not be more fair for them to be in 3 like everyone else?
We think so.
Yeah.
Well, I'm confused now, I think. if IRS basically determines the gross and the profit and all that stuff and figures the class, is this right, and puts them in a class?
Well, it doesn't figure the class. We do that.
We do. We do that being the state.
No, the little graph. No, the city does. Or GC and I did it for this city.
Oh, okay, but on all cities alike have the same class and have the same things in each class, right? This is just not for Aiken.
Do you remember the graph that I showed you last time?
I can't say that I do, boy.
What we did is we took the profit-making indexes and plotted them on a graph, and then cut the profit index axis into 7 equal increments. Everybody that fell below the first line got put in rate class 1 because they had similar ability to make a profit according to the index. That was the group they were in. That's how the rate classes came up. The IRS statistics allow us to calculate that profit index on this axis. This is the next code axis that we plotted and made the graph. Does that make any sense?
Well, I'm sure it does, but I
think you answer your question. Basically, municipalities that use the system, you go about 80-90% of the state use the same class that you do. I think that was the question.
It was. All of a sudden, I was beginning to wonder if we had something different than the other municipalities.
So their Class 8s are the same as our Class 8s?
The businesses that are put in Class 8 are the same.
Okay.
But the rates are not the same from municipality to municipality.
Okay.
But how is it justified if we're going for a totally fair system? What's the reason for this aberration?
For Class 8?
Yeah.
As I said, contractors were put there simply because we needed a place to add this additional language. It didn't fit. And ordinarily, they would be assigned the same rate as the class they would fall into under the system. Railroads are set by statute. Telephone companies are set by statute. Insurance companies, all of those things, don't fit in the system
of
the legislature.
I understand that. My focus is really on the contractor question.
Yeah.
And that's an arbitrary.
I don't know why you charge them a lower rate.
That's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, if you look at the tax comparison on general contractors, which is Class 8, very bottom of the page here, under this thing here. And you take a look at, like, Myrtle Beach. They have a rate that's 5 times higher than what we have. Only one community, that's Greenwood, has a slightly less rate than we do. Some people make a lot of money out of contractors, builders. For whatever reason, Aiken chose several years ago, back in the 30s or 40s, to have it at this lower rate. But again, you can see in Class 8 under general contractors with all the different cities here, there's a wide range of 2, 3, 4 times, 5 times that we have. And again, that's a decision council can make.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hung up on now. How can we make that decision? I thought these things had to be 15 cents between each category, and that follows all the way down till we get to Category 8.
Because 8 is a collection of individual rates. There is no Class 8 rate.
See, it's an arbitrary rate, really.
No, it's a place to put all those businesses that don't fit in the system. Because the legislature is
right, but if we wanted to take this, and let's say we were going to keep the base rate in Class 8 at $50, currently it states that the rate per thousand is at 54 cents per thousand. That's the recommended rate. It's going up 4 cents. Currently it's 50 cents in the SIC system. We're raising to 54 cents in the NAICS system.
Well, that's only a part of the contract.
But I mean, could, if we wanted to, could that be 60 cents or 70 cents or 80 cents or $1 without causing a conflict with the other 7 classes?
Well, you really should assign it to Class 3, right?
Right. The 40. What we should probably do is change that to the $40 and then the $1.19.
For all contractors.
For contractors. Since that is the rate class they would
If the council wanted to do that, we could certainly go ahead and change that.
Yeah.
We're just keeping it the way it's been consistently for decades.
But isn't that unconstitutional?
What I'm suggesting is
the way to do it. I know, right. What you've said, put it in Class 3.
Yeah.
But the way we've got it, isn't what we're doing unconstitutional?
Let's say it's at least questionable.
Okay. Do the other cities lower the rate 5% by each million that a business? Is this our system or is this a widespread system?
They're almost
double.
Yeah.
I know. So
it's going
to be plus 50%.
And many cities do it, and there are cities that some of them will have different break points. Some of them will drop 10%, but only do the change every $2 million. There are many cities that do it just like we do, but some do and some don't.
So that's the one thing that's up to us as well, then.
It comes down to fairness.
Oh, okay. As long as every category has that same declining or not have it, it has to be the same. Yeah. Yes.
To put it where it belongs.
Thanks.
Instead of having the special rate, that's
been 19.
Class 3.
Suppose we said that over the next few years, let's say arbitrarily say 10 years, we want to get that rate from 54 cents up to 119. So that it doesn't come as a one big shocker, you know. We want to do it gradually, maybe 5 years, six, seven, whatever we want to do. Then that could be the revenue that we're getting that we're not getting now.
Yeah. Which could adjust.
And maybe we can adjust some of the others equally down.
Well, the others, you go to your 7 rate classes at $1 per thousand. If you want to take off a penny in each one of those, that's fine. Because you're maintaining your 15 cent interval. As long as you do that, you're okay. In Class 8, those rates are individually determined from various factors. Your contractor should not have been, but they were. So, yes, if you want to creep up on to get where you should be, you have the power to do that, and as long as you don't get challenged, you can get by.
As long as we don't get challenged, we would. You mean by contractors?
No, contractors won't, because they get the benefit from it.
By some other group.
No, I mean going up.
Oh, you go up.
We are approaching constitutionality, right? As we approach it.
They would not have a basis of challenge if you go up on them and leave everybody else the same.
If we went up though like a dime a year, so they're at 54 cents this year, they went up to 64 cents, then 74, 84.
So you get them up to.
Until we get them up to where we can move them to Class 3.
Where they belong. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to ask a question since I deal with a lot of these contractors. And is there any other group that pays, like a home builder, he pays on his total gross sales, right? And he would pay to 54 and it goes to $1.19. An electrician who works on the same house and who's part of that sales, he then would pay the $1.19 on. So look at it from the standpoint of incrementally of the sale of that house. And if you treat it the same way all the way across the board, isn't that a little unusual? In other words, you're collecting the 119 on the increment each time each one of the subcontractors does it. Dick, I know where you're coming from, but I'm telling you, isn't that a little unique in this regard? In other words, Walmart sells something, and that's their total cost. And it'd be about like Walmart sells it, but then we got to charge the maker of the lawnmower what their portion was, and he's got to pay it again. Isn't that a little unique? I mean, but I guess other people just do it.
It's not, because you have to remember what the business tax is. It's a tax for the privilege of engaging in business. And the legislature has said you have to base it on the gross income of that business.
The easiest way is you would
have to judge by the business activity. Has to be taxed that way in order to maintain the integrity of the system.
We did last year.
And it doesn't make any difference to somebody else at another level to include that cost and what They're in the building.
Nice to see you.
You got wholesalers that pay the tax.
And then we, if they don't want to do that, then we'll get decreases.
It's going to include in the price all the taxes that the wholesaler pays.
We all reduce the cost of control.
It's just a cost of doing business. It's not a tax.
For the construction.
Well, I'm just saying that would be the largest. And I understand where you're coming from, Dick, but if you multiply this out of force, you're talking about increasing somebody's taxes. You want to see this room full.
I have an example just here for construction.
10 cents. I mean, and I'm not saying that some adjustment doesn't need to be made, but you're talking about a percentage increase here of being the highest percentage increase I've ever seen as far as you're talking about trying to be revenue neutral. And if you're going to raise that, I think we need to be very careful on that. But I understand what you're saying, and we need to probably look at it to be fair. It doesn't take any genius to figure out we're number six on it, and everybody else is below us. I mean, that you can see that.
Yeah. Mayor, where do we want? Where do we want?
My concern is that if someone were to do an expose, as Jane has suggested, on the rates of what one business is paying versus what another business is paying, and it comes out that the contractors are paying 54 cents versus somebody else paying $1.19, maybe for working on the same house, how does that come across?
Well, no, I mean, they're paying, if he's a contractor, isn't it?
All the subs would be the same.
Subcontractors are the same.
It does. You know, I'm not trying to raise anybody's taxes here, and I've never wanted to do that from the beginning, but just looking at this, somebody will question why are we giving the contractors such a break here? Is it because it's been that way for years?
Beverly, it's the only reason we kept it the way it has been.
I think that's got to change.
Yeah.
That's got to.
And I think if it gets out that is the case, then I think we have a problem with some of these people who feel they can't afford, who are complaining now about their business licenses.
And also understand that everybody outside the city pays a double rate. So, and most of these subcontractors and many of the contractors are outside the city. So when we, whatever we do, let's say we raise the rates up, which is fine, but everybody, we have very few contractors inside the city, which again, that's just the price of doing business inside the city.
And I guess I think we need to make some effort to
raise it up incrementally,
put them where they need to be, and you probably can't do it all at once, but.
Right.
You need to at least move in that direction.
Let me ask them.
To pass it on to the
homeowner.
Yeah,
Roger. What you said was that most of the home builders are outside, but they're paying double.
Correct. Anybody has a business outside the city and works inside.
So
the city.
So all those builders that you know, like, you know, they're outside. And I know we can list them. So they're paying, instead of $54, $1.08.
That's correct.
So
based on what they're reporting, we don't know what they're doing inside the city. We only know they're working inside the city when we find them at a particular job. They could be doing several jobs because we're not looking at their total gross.
But what I'm saying is that,
like the other?
Well, because we do it on gross. How much is outside the city? How much is inside the city? We don't know what their gross is inside versus outside.
But I thought we only charged them on the inside stuff.
Correct.
No,
but it's hard to estimate what's inside the city versus what's outside the city.
I was told we do a pretty good job of that.
You're taking their word for it, in other words.
We do as good as we can, the staff that we
but
have.
It's kind of the higher system is very rough.
When are we going to sit down with the budget?
For what it's worth.
We're going to be sitting down on the budget on May 2nd. So we could have on May 2nd bringing these differentials, these pages that are showing the percentage change for the restaurant, hotel, doctor, barber, general retail, etc., what it would be at $1,550,000. At that time you want to change, then we could sit down, look in the budget, and start seeing what you want to revise. But we'll have that all ready for you on May 2nd. I would recommend we go ahead for first reading on changing over the NAICS system, though, at the next meeting, because it's going to take two readings to get it, and we need to get these bills out by the end of the month.
End of
May.
May.
Yeah.
So I think we all agree that we want to go to the NAICS system, and since we're going to have to change it, that's going to have to be an ordinance change going from the SIC to the NAICS.
If you can separate it from these fees and rates per thousand, then I can see having a hearing and going to the NAICS system. But I think that's definitely debatable, the base fee and the rate per thousand and the million thing and all that. I mean, I'm not going to vote. I don't want to vote on that as if this is the only way it can be, because it isn't.
Mr. Attorney, you would have to answer that.
If you change from one system to the other system, you're going to have to set forth what the rate per classification is going to be.
I mean, okay.
You'll have to establish that, I believe. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, because otherwise you've got, I believe you have in the license, in the ordinance now, you have it under the SIC system, it says, you know, classification one pays based on this rate. Well, if you change, if you do away with the SIC system and you adopt the NAICS system, you're going to have the corresponding numbers to go along with it.
But what happens if this is not done by the end of May?
Then we stay with the SIC system.
For another year.
Okay.
And why is this outdated?
Well, yeah, it's outdated.
It hasn't been updated since.
I'm just trying to get an idea of the span here, time, what we could do. I mean, does everybody agree we want to go to the new system? Regardless,
yeah.
I mean, not the rates now, just the new system. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Okay. So we could certainly pass that on first reading, and then we still have a couple of weeks. I mean, we may have to have a couple of special meetings to still consider.
But we don't know what the
what
new
cuts.
System is.
Now, we don't know the new rates.
The new rates.
Right.
Okay.
But we do know we don't want to go to the new system.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't that help us if we went ahead as soon as we possible to go ahead and have first reading on going to the new system? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
But we have to have the rates at that time. But knowing that, hey, this is just first reading.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we can go back and look at the rates and very likely make some adjustments before second reading.
Can we still get the percentages that we talked about, Roger, on the...
Yeah, for the May 2nd meeting.
And see what the percentage increases are going to be on a revenue neutral at $1,550,000?
Yeah, for the May 2nd budget meeting, we'll
have
those.
As long as we have that, I think we can then...
But first reading, we'll stay with the rates that are proposed here, and then we can always make an adjustment for second reading.
With the clear understanding that we're going to sit down and look at these rates, and at least four of us somewhere along the line's got to come up with what they think is right. At least four.
Do we want to have on the agenda to approve this concept of the new system at our next meeting? Is that
That's what I'm suggesting.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that we could have it on second reading after we have the budget meeting.
Okay.
Then you could hopefully at the budget meeting, or if we have to have three budget meetings or half a dozen, whatever it's going to take, then we'll have it by the second.
Okay.
It's 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock, is it? I'd have to look in my agenda. It was listed in yesterday's agenda.
No, there's no doubt about this. This is a complicated issue. It's complicated for us to understand right off, and I think we've got to have good communications with the press, too, so that you understand exactly, and you probably understand everything, right? But we need to make sure, because once it gets in the paper, you know, if something is not right, then that could stir up a lot of unnecessary discussion.
And we don't want the citizens to panic, Mr. Mayor.
Absolutely,
yeah,
that's right. That's my point.
Yeah.
We don't want them to panic.
And the point of this was never to get another way to raise taxes.
No.
That was never the point of this.
No. And if we can lower it, let's lower it some, you know. If we can, it makes sense.
It's the fairness issue, Jane, in terms of being fair to these individuals.
Contract.
Yeah.
And I think it's only fair to raise the class 8 a little bit, even if we have to go 10 years out, a little bit every year.
Roger, but just to clarify this, if most of the contractors are out of the city,
mm-hmm.
okay, they pay double the 54. Is that right?
That's correct.
So they're paying
and double the base.
Double the base. It's $1.08.
So $100 initially, and then a dollar rate. If they went to the class three, they'd be paying $1.19 if they were inside the city.
And two.
So they'd be paying $2.38 if they're outside the city, if they were in the proper rate.
Yeah.
And what I'm hearing most of council say is, let's not double it immediately, but let's try to find a way to bring it up to the right rate class that they're in.
Is that fair to charge them $2.38 if they're outside, or is that?
Well, yeah, I might have that reverse.
And they be coming to the city. Dane, you'd like that. We'd all like that. Contractors move into the city.
All cities do double the rate for all outside city businesses. That's very common.
I did want to see.
Other businesses have their offices outside.
That's right. But double?
So again, to be fair, contractors should be treated as companies.
Okay, is that...
There are other groups of people...
Okay, we'll have first reading then on the next agenda, and then we'll go from there and probably at least another special meeting. Okay, we stand adjourned.
That was fun.